How would you like to create a seven-figure legacy after midlife crisis? David Nassif will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about David is that after an 18-year corporate career, David was fired at age 63, nearly broke and facing an identity crisis. And instead of retreating, he launched a B2B sales agency and developed the one-page wealth compass, reaching a seven-figure legacy by age 69. And today, he is a number one Amazon Hot New Release author. And David teaches high-achieving leaders how to replace 50-page financial noise with a radical one-page system of sovereignty. He's the founder of One Page Wealth Compass and number one Amazon Hot New Release author after a late life reset. And he can show you how to jump the fence from corporate employee to a million-dollar entrepreneur after age 60. So, David, tell us about your midlife crisis and how can someone create a seven-figure legacy after hitting one?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Well, Lily, first of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me here as a guest. I'm thrilled to be here and talk with you and your listeners. I tell you, I guess the best point is to start where it all began. I was 63 and just got fired after 18 years with the same company. I wouldn't wish that day on anyone. I did the math and it was brutal. If we drained all of our savings and all of our retirement, we were scheduled to be broke by 65. When most people are thinking, hey, it's time to sit back and enjoy life, we would have been not good. But here, the hardest part, Lily, wasn't so much that. I mean, that was very bad. It was very difficult. But the hardest part was driving home, thinking, how am I going to tell my wife, Mary? We'd been married for 30 years, and she did not deserve the mess I just threw our life into. So anyways, after several months of dead-end job searching, I decided to take a huge risk. And I went to work as an independent sales agent on straight commission. No salary, no safety net, no benefits. The first months were brutal. Cold calls, constant rejection, rookie mistakes. I heard no's so many. I can't count the number of no's I heard in that first couple months. But you know, as things went on, looking back on the experience, I can reflect more on it now. That rejection I was constantly getting, that was the resistance I needed to build a mental toughness I needed to get through that nightmare. 10 months later, I hit an incredible milestone. After grinding and grinding, I suddenly was making more money than my six-figure income at my corporate job. And I was thrilled. And I felt like we made it. But then it hit me. We didn't make anything. I was making good money most of my career. And look where it got me. I mean, on the edge of financial disaster, I said, I have to learn how to invest. I have to learn how to build wealth. And I can't waste time with a bunch of investment theories. I need to get down to real stuff. And so what I did is I read 21 books on personal finances. I listened to 13 financial podcasts consistently, read blogs and newsletters. But every time I got a good idea, I'd put it on this one piece of paper. And I kept filling up this one piece of paper with just the best ideas. And suddenly I had what I called my one-page wealth compass. And I made it as kind of a set-it-and-forget-it approach because I had an agency to grow and develop. I couldn't waste time looking at Wall Street and looking at stocks. I had to just set it and forget it. I did that. 6 years later, at age 69, we achieved what I once thought was impossible. From terrified of being broke to a seven-figure portfolio and real financial freedom. Lily, I now know it is never too late to rewrite your story. Because if I can pull that off starting as late as 63, anybody can with the right direction.
Wow, sounds amazing. Tell us what's on that one page.
What's written on that page? Can you give me that? Well, I have a gift, by the way, at the end of the show. I'm going to give all your listeners a free download to the actual one-page compass I use from 63 to 69, and I still use it today. It's still my guide today, so it really is. But can I share with you, I think it would help to understand what inspired the whole one-page compass, because I didn't just think, well, I think I'll make a one-page compass. So I heard this true story about the same time I was going through all this, and it was this. It was The scientists at the Max Planck Institute did an experiment. What they did is they placed people in the center of a dense German forest, and they told them to walk in a straight line to the edge. Now, these were confident and capable people, but when the clouds covered the sun, the GPS tracking showed they were gradually starting to walk in circular motions. Some of them were ending up right back where they began, and yet every single one of them was absolutely convinced they were walking in a perfectly straight line. Lily, that is my life story for 40 years. I was working hard, making decent money, doing what I thought was right, and it was getting me nowhere. I was ending up right back where I began, or even worse than I began in some years. And so that's when I says, no more. I got to do something different. This is not working, and I need a guide. I need a compass. Now, not a metal compass, but in my case, it was literally a one-page compass. And that made all the difference for me. It really did.
Thank you. So what are your 10 commandments for creating a seven-figure legacy after midlife crisis? Is that blueprint on your Wealth Camp compass?
Yes. Well, it's actually, the Wealth Compass has two parts, so I'll just show it to you real quick. One part is the 9 trail markers to financial freedom. What's nice about this is people can just say, a lot of people say, where do I start, David? What do I do first? Well, it depends on the person. What you do is you look at these, and maybe you're in a career situation where you're underemployed, you're not making the kind of money. Well, then you're going to start with number one right there, okay? But you say, no, I have a good job. I'm making good money, David, but I'm really in a lot of credit card debt. Well, then you go right to number three. So I'm saying what's nice is you can pick where your starting point is, because some people are going to be further along than others. Just depends on the person. And then you start there and you move forward. But what's nice is we have these 5 North Star principles on the other side. You know how sometimes you got these steps, but then a shiny object comes about or this new hot tip comes about and you're just tempted to get off the track. Well, when you look at the 5 North Star principles, you say, wait a minute, that's not consistent with this principle. If I do that, I'm actually going against that principle. And so it kind of keeps you reined in, so you stay laser-like focused on, building wealth. That's part one. That's the one page. This is like the 30,000-foot view, Lily. So the big picture, am I going the right way? But then the second, I call it the 3D. The second D is action plan. This is the companion book that goes with the compass. And what this is this gives you the ground game, the step-by-step, hey, turn right here, turn left here. Some people say, well, David, I'm trying to get out of debt, but how do I do that? Well, then you just go, it says right here, go to chapter 4, and you go right in the book, and it tells you exactly where to go and what to do. So it makes it simple, it makes it easy. And the third thing is what I call these navigation links. And no matter where you are on the compass, no matter what point you're at the compass, and you're stuck or you're not sure, you can look at the navigation link and it tells you what chapter to go to find the specific, real, simple but detailed information that you need to get out of that mess that you may be in or whatever you're struggling with. And that's a way to bring it all together and keep it simple, because it's what I do. This is what I do actually. Once a week for 2 minutes, I have it on my calendar, Friday at 4 o'clock, 2 minutes. I sit down and I review my compass, see where I'm at, where I want to go, review my my North Star principles, and that's it. It's really easy. Have you ever read a book, Lily, and you got a great idea from it, and you says, wow, I'm going to really use that. And then 2 years later, you come across the idea and go, oh yeah, I meant to do that, and I kind of forgot, Well, that happens so much to people. Well, when you have a one-page compass, it doesn't happen, because every once a week when you're sitting down, you're saying, hey, I still haven't started my smart protection fund, and I've been talking about it for 3 weeks. And every week you're looking at it. So after a while, you say, I got to just do this. I got to do the next step. But see, that's the thing. You don't get a chance to forget about it when you have a simple kind of a private accountability for you to change your behavior in a very healthy, positive way. Once I did this, it made all the difference. Because I really believe this in the business. Is clear focus beats misdirected speed every time. Lily, for 40 years, I had misdirected speed, and I was spinning my wheels, making money, going fast, but not really getting anywhere with wealth building. Just 6 years, I did more with this in terms of building my wealth than the 40 years put together I had before it. That's why the compass means so much to me, and that's the kind of things that are actually specifically on the compass for that your listeners will all get a free one-page download at the end.
Perfect. Now, tell us what's on the Wealth Camp compass specifically. What specific steps should someone take to create a seven-figure legacy?
Well, basically, like I said, you kind of find out where you're at. So let's pretend like the person looking at this, they're really good with their income. They have a good job, they maybe graduated or whatever, and they feel good about their money and what they're making. So then they would go to the protection fund, okay? And it's, we call it the 3% protection fund. A lot of gurus out there, they say you should have like an emergency fund, and it should be like $1,000 or $1,500 or $800 or whatever, and they give a dollar amount. I say that's not right, because if you have somebody who is making $50,000 a year, and you have somebody making $500,000 a year, they're going to have a different level of emergencies, okay? So when you turn it into a percentage, it makes it fit the person's situation, not a fixed dollar amount that 2 decades from now is going to be outdated, but they just keep it because that's their deal, you know, whatever it is. So that's the next step. And say, okay, say you got your protection fund, then the next step would be getting out of debt. And say you say, well, I got a lot of credit card debt, David. I really need to get out of it. Now, we're not talking about mortgage debt. We're talking about like consumer debt that, you know, it's not going to build you any wealth. It's just dry. What it is you're paying interest to make other people rich and take it away from your wealth. I'm saying let's get out of debt so we can turn that money around and aim it towards building your wealth. And that's kind of how they work. Can I tell you one of the things that we talk about in the book and that we reference on the compass that I think might surprise some people? It's the biggest financial mistake most people make, and they're not even aware of it. Here's what it is. People are paying tiny termite-size fees that quietly inflict termite-like destruction on their portfolios. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about here, okay? Lily, you got two people, A and B. They both start out in their career. They're 25. They're going to work till they're 65, say, just from this example. And they're both making average income, nothing great. And so they both decide to put a modest $25 a week in their investment account or whatever it is, okay, and to save it for the future. And they say, you know, we can afford $25 a week easy. It's not much. And that's what they do for 40 years. At the end of 40 years, here's what happens, okay? Well, first of all, let me tell you how they invested it. Person A put their money in a low-cost index fund with a 0.03% management fee. Person B put their money in an advisor who charges a full 1%, which is standard, and they put them in an active fund with a 5.75 upfront load and a 0.66% ongoing management fee, which is very common. Okay, now fast forward, let's assume historical market returns, both contributing the exact same amount of money. Person A, at the end of that period, has a portfolio worth $1 million with just $25 a week. Person B has a portfolio worth $570,000, just barely over $500,000. There is a $430,000 difference in their portfolios when they retire. And this isn't due to market crashes or bad investment choices. This is strictly fees quietly eating away at their portfolio, the B person's portfolio, little by little, month by month, year by year. And here's the thing about it. We assume they never got a raise. If you factor normal raises in there, that $300,000, $430,000 difference would even be a bigger number. But here's the saddest thing of all, Lily. Person B probably feels like he got really good service from his advisor. He's a nice guy. We went golfing one day. He knows my kids' names. But little did he realize, Person B did the equivalent of funding someone else's retirement with half of his own money. That's the sad thing about this. I am not against advisors, but I am against products that enrich Wall Street at the expense of their clients' portfolio. And I'm going to tell you something that's embarrassing, Lily, and that is this. Before my compass, I never questioned fees. I just felt, hey, those are the rules of the game. Everyone's got to pay them. That's the rule of the game. I later found out after I made my compass that the rules we don't question can cost us the most. In Person B's case, it cost him $430,000. That's a pretty big difference. And that's why I say we got to be aware of fees. And that's a big part of the compass.
Thank you. Wouldn't you agree, though, that in certain cases, having a financial advisor might actually make you more money? I'm talking if that financial advisor were to give you good advice that could lead to your investments kind of growing. And that's the whole point of having one.
Let me tell you, I feel the reason that some people should have advisors, and I agree with you, there are some people who absolutely need advisors. I know people that when the market crashes or whatever, they panic and they want to sell everything, and which is the worst possible time, by the way, to sell anything is when the market crashes. Those kind of people, they need an advisor. to calm them down, to rein them in, to help them be guided in the right direction. But they still need the compass. Here's why. Even if you have an advisor, you want to make sure he is directing you in the right way. Yes, he's holding back your emotional spurts, but he's also putting you in the right kind of investments, not like the person Bia was talking about. But I agree, if he's a competent, ethical advisor, and that person feels like emotionally, I need an advisor because I just get excited when the market is up or down and I do goofy things. Yeah, you definitely need an advisor, so get one. Okay, I'm not against advisors, as I said. I'm just against products that are just disastrous for consumers. That's what I'm really against. That makes sense.
Thank you. For people that think they are over the hill kind of thing, like they cannot really manage to take on more stuff and they're already broke and they're over 40, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, let's talk about, that's two different issues here. One is age and one is I just don't have any money. Let's talk about the I don't have any money first. Like a lot of people say, David, that's nice for you to say that, oh yeah, put so much money away and then you'll, one day you'll be rich, but I don't even have any money to pay my bills barely. I can't put money away. That's crazy, David. Well, let me tell you this. First of all, that's a lie, that we all can do it if we have even a below average income. And let me give you a very clear example, okay? And it's the NBA. The average NBA player, National Basketball Association player, makes over $10 million per year. Now, I didn't say, Lily, $10 million in a career. I said in a single year, that's what the average one makes. And yet, 60% of them are broke only 5 years after retirement, according to the Netflix documentary Broke. And look at the NFL. They're even worse. NFL players, after 2 years of retirement, 78% of them are either bankrupt or in serious financial stress. That's according to Sports Illustrated. Now, let's compare that to Dale Schroeder, a basketball-loving carpenter who made a modest income his entire life, and yet he chose to live below his means and invest wisely the difference. He, at the end, was worth, had a $3 million portfolio. That's more money than most NBA and NFL players end up with after 5 years of retirement. And this guy made pennies compared to what they made. So here's the point of this. And this is what I had to find out, and I didn't understand this until my compass. Building wealth and making money are two separate skill sets. Just because you're good at one doesn't make you good at the other. Those basketball and those professional athletes, they were pros at making money. They made millions of dollars a year. They were pretty bad, most of them, not all of them, most of them were pretty bad at building wealth. Dale Schroeder, not so good at making money. You know, he made a below average income. But building wealth, he was a master at that. And that's why I say you've got to be aware that these are different skills. And just because you're not making a lot of money doesn't mean you can't build wealth. But again, what did Dale Schroeder did? He did North Star principle number one, live on less than you earn. This is critical. Nobody can save and invest if they are spending more money than they make. And one good piece of evidence, Lily, to prove that they're spending more than they make is debt. If they have debt, I don't mean mortgage. I'm talking about, you know, consumer debt. That's evidence, that fact. They are living beyond their means. And so that's something that they have to address first before they can even think about building wealth.
Thank you. So tell us what kind of practical things can people do to build wealth?
Well, I think that the first thing is to don't do things out of order. Let me show you what I'm talking about here. On this wealth compass, one of the things it says is to accumulate wealth, that's step number four, at the same time you do the smart protection fund or an emergency fund. Now let me tell you how people mess this up, and even the big famous gurus that everyone knows their names messes this up. What they say is this: once you get out of consumer debt, the very next thing you should do is build a 3 to 6 months emergency fund and put it in the bank or a savings CD or whatever it is, okay? Then, once you're safe and you've got 3 to 6 months of emergency fund, then you start investing. Well, when I made my compass, I questioned everything and I did the math on everything, and this is what I found out. Okay, if somebody were to do that and they were to save 3 to 6 months of their income in emergency fund, how long do you think that's going to take most people to do? Probably at least a year to save 3 to 6 months of your whole income. That's going to take at least a year, maybe more. Okay, so what they're saying is don't start investing until a year after you've saved this money, or maybe more, okay? Well, when I did the math and I said, okay, what if they did it at the same time? What if they started their emergency fund after they got out of debt and started investing? Now, remember, they're going to have a lot of cash freed up because they're not going to be paying any more debts, and all those debts are going to be gone. If they do that, they'd be much better off, because the person who follows the traditional advice, first does emergency fund, then starts investing, if you were to take that money he was out of the market, that 1 year's worth of investing, and take it to the 65, he would have, or she would have, missed out on $500,000 of compound growth just for that 1 year. But if he had done it the right way, which is do them at the same time, that person would not only have had emergency fund, they would also had $500,000 more when they retired. And that's significant. That's why what I'm saying here is it's not just the steps, it's the order that a lot of people get wrong. That's why I actually have them numbered 1 through 9, so you can do them in the right order. And this way you can really maximize your wealth building potential. Because these little things, $500,000 there, the other guy, remember, he had $500,000 almost situation. Those $500,000 add up, you know, little by little, and it's painless to do it the right way. It's absolutely painless. We're not asking you to take any more money out of your pocket. Both situations, they're putting in the same amount of money. They're just ending up with a lot more money because they did it the right way.
Thank you. Sense. What about people who, let's say, they are making $2,000 per month and they are spending $5,000 a month? How can they potentially create this emergency fund where they feel like they don't even have enough to pay their bills?
Okay, if they're making $2,000 a month, and they're spending, you said, $5,000 a month?
Yes.
Okay, they have much bigger problems than investing. They shouldn't even be thinking about investing. The first thing they should be doing is either, one, step one, looking at their career and income and saying, am I underemployed here? That's your first step then. You need to get your income and get a job that is actually making you money, because that's very dangerous situation. They're like the basketball people making $10 million. It's just on a smaller scale. But also, at the same time, at the exact same time they're doing that, they can start looking at where can we cut back. And I have a whole chapter on that. Easy things, you know, that aren't that difficult to do, that aren't that painful either. They're actually painless in a lot of cases. So they want to do both at the same time, because that's pretty way out of whack there, Lily, what you're saying. Spending $5,000, making $2,000. So they got an income problem, but they got a spending problem. And they got to work on both of them right away and have kind of a wake-up call, because that's pretty dangerous situation, and it's not sustainable at all.
Thank you. Tell us some ways to cut back or save on certain things.
Well, I'll tell you the first thing is, let's say you're married. I mean, doesn't, you don't have to be married, but just pretend you're married. You got to get both people on board, Lydia, the wife and the husband. You can't just have the husband or just the wife want to do all this stuff, and the other person, nah, I don't know if I really want to do that. I don't want to cut back. So you got to look at the goal together. You got to say, what's our goal? Do we want to be living out of our car when we're 65? Do we want to be having to decide between food and a prescription? Or do we want to live comfortably? Do we want to really enjoy our life? And if both, assume both that they want the enjoyment of their life, then when they make short-term sacrifices, they're on the same page. They're working together because they understand the goal. And so then when they talk about cutting out that one subscription they've got to that streaming service that they haven't watched in 3 months, you know, that's cost them, you know, whatever, $80 a month or whatever, they can agree that, yeah, that we don't probably need that one, because frankly, that's not going to get us close to our goal. And going out to dinner 3 times a week, we can probably, you know, temporarily bring that back a little bit. You know, these are simple things, but if you're not on the same page, then you're always fighting. It's like, no, I want to do that. But when you have the same goal in mind, it makes everything so much easier, and you're working together for a common goal and not just to nitpick, or just because one person's a nerd and the other person's wants to just, you know, live like the way they feel like living it at the moment. And so that, I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I would do first for sure.
Thank you. For those people that have a little bit of money to invest, how do people decide where to invest?
That's a very, very, very good question. And I would go back, let's revisit that real quick, that one example I gave you, a person A and person B. If you remember, I told you person A, they invest in a low-cost index fund with a 0.03% expense ratio. That's like less than 10%. No, less than 0.1%. That's very little, okay? So what I recommend, and this is what I do, I'll just tell you what I do, because that's what my research, I found the best way to do it, is I only have two funds. I keep it super, super, super simple. I don't want to complicate this at all. I only have two funds. One fund, I own every publicly traded stock in the United States. Okay, it's real simple. It has a 0.03% expense ratio to it, very inexpensively. This means my low turnover, low taxes, low expenses. So most of my money is working for me, not working for the government or working for some person on commission or whatever. So the other one I own is an international fund, which is every publicly traded stock outside the United States. Now, these are not expensive. You can get them, you can buy a share for under $100 for both of them. It's not like it's, you know, expensive at all. But now, so Lily, what I'm doing here is I'm totally diversified. I literally own every publicly traded stock on the planet. For me to go broke, for me to lose everything, the entire global economic system would have to collapse. And if that happens, we're in a lot bigger trouble than worrying about our investments, okay? So that's what I recommend is a low-cost index fund. There's so, I talk about in my book specific ones, but there's so many. You could, you know, you could do some research on your own and find them. But you want to make sure they have a low expense ratio, under 0.1%, okay? And you want to make sure they're highly diversified so you can sleep well at night. You don't have to stress about, oh, the market's down, you know? That's a crazy thing. With my investment approach, when the market's down, I am thrilled. When other people are panicking and selling, I'm buying more shares at discount prices. My only regret was during that six-year period from 63 to 69, I wish the market was down more because I'd have bought even more. You know, here's the thing. A lot of people don't understand the math. The math, it really tells it to you. There's a thing called the rule of 72. And what it says is that if you're getting a 10% return on your money, which is very common with the kind of investments I'm talking about, your money will double every 7.2 years or roughly 86 months. Once I started my Compass, my first double occurred, Lily, in only 30 months. My second one was 13 months, and my third one was 29 months, for an average of 24 months, way less than half the expected 86-month time period. But how I was doing it, it wasn't so much just the returns. I was doing three things. One, I was saving a good portion of my income every month because I had a short time horizon. Two, I was getting in the right kind of investments, what I talked about, the low-cost index fund. And three, I was using market volatility to work for me instead of against me. So many people, they buy high and sell low, which is the opposite of what you want to do. I got off that merry-go-round. I got off that nightmare, and I started investing. And when the market was down, like I said, I was thrilled. Picture this scene, Lily. If you went to a department store and they had a big sale, 50% off, would you say, hey, I don't want no 50% off. I want to pay full retail for that thing. You tell me when it's going back to full real price. I don't look at a discount. You would never say that. You'd say, hey, that's great. Well, but when it comes to the stock market, people think backwards. When the market is down, they go, oh no, they panic, I want to get out. No, that's the time you should really be buying when the market's down because that's when you're getting things on sale. The market always comes back. Historically, it has not only always come back and recovered, it has gone on to new heights. That isn't wild optimism, Lily. That is over two centuries of data. Two centuries of data makes me feel pretty safe. That's my approach to the investing part of it.
Thank you. So how did you discover your investment strategy and your finance strategy? Is it through reading a lot of books and following a lot of mentors? How did you decide which one out of the hundreds of potential strategies was the right one for you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I went for books that were read, they're written by credible people who've really done it. Okay. Not these impressive headlines to clickbait things. No, I'd say a story of that. I wanted books that, you know, the author was real and the author had a track record and the author had a system that made logical sense to me, that just, you know, wasn't some hocus pocus magic trick thing. And after I found one really good book, then they'd mention something in that book about another book. And so I'd go read that book. And then they'd mention a couple things about two other books. But see, these people who don't have conflicts of interest, they really are truly just giving out quality information from their decades of successful experience. That's where I looked and that's where I went. And I stayed away from the fringe guys that are just trying to make a quick buck off of you. Most of these people weren't even trying to make money. They were just strictly sharing their success with people from their decades of success. And that's where I went to. And so many of them, I feel like, Lily, I know them personally. I've never met any of them and I probably never will. But so many of them I feel like I know personally, because when you write a book, you're giving your best stuff from years or decades of experience and put it in that one book. And when and you read it, you're getting distilled knowledge that is just amazing. And so it was like little gold mines I kept finding and kept reading. And I know most people aren't going to want to read 21 books. I've read many more than 20 books after that. That was just the first 6 years. But I'm saying you don't have to read so many, because I've simplified the system in one book and with one page Wealth Compass. And so it makes it a lot easier to for people to, I don't know. And another thing too, Lily, about the book that I wrote, and again, I'm not, there's nothing on my site I can make money on. I'm not selling anything. I'm giving the compass away for free. The book is at Amazon. It's really inexpensive, so it's not, I'm not going to make any money off that. I'm just here to give back. I mean, I was in a storm in my life, and somebody handed me a lifeline in the form of inspiration on this compass, and I just want to share with other people how to do that. But the thing about my book is, some of your listeners may not be into financial stuff. Like, it's kind of boring, I have to admit, and it's technical, and a lot of charts and graphs and spreadsheets. And I knew that people didn't need that, and they didn't want that. And so what I did is I filled my book with true stories about people who succeeded and failed, myself included, and why they succeeded and failed. So then when I, after I tell the story, then they read the principle, they go, oh, that's what people meant by that. I've always heard that, but I never knew what they meant. Now I get it, and I get why it works here and doesn't work here. And so people have told me, David, your book, the stories are so interesting. You could take the financial stuff out of it and just read the stories, and it'd be so interesting. But when you put the financial stuff with it, now you not only have an interesting stories, you've got tools that are going to actually work for you and get many working for you instead of you always working for money. And that's a big part of it.
Thank you. Can someone really build wealth after 60? Because I think a lot of people who are, let's say, 55 plus are in the mindset of, you know, like, I'm going to retire and I don't want to do anything apart from like traveling around the world or sitting in my backyard and watching TV. And how do you get someone from that mentality into creating a seven-figure legacy after a midlife crisis? Because I think a lot of people, even I would say over 40, don't want to learn anything. They don't want to be bothered with like anything new. They're stuck in their ways. And some of them even think, can I really learn something like so transformational? Like, for example, I don't even know like how to invest in like stocks and this kind of thing. I have never done that. Right. And I'm 44. Right. So like, I mean, I'm keen to learn, but there are people who are not keen to learn anymore.
Yep. First of all, let me reassure everybody, you don't have to be an expert, and you can get a Robinhood account, which is what my son has. Okay. And you can literally start with $1, $1. Matter of fact, I challenge every one of your listeners tonight to within the next 24 hours, if you don't have an investment account, open up a free Robinhood account and put $1 or $10 or $15, whatever you got, you know, and put it in there and just start. I think the biggest thing is to take that first step and start. But let's go back to your question about what if you're 40 and 50 and you don't want to really learn anything new and you're just kind of set your way. Lily, you described me. That was me. When I was in my 40s, 50s, I did the same thing. It took a crisis for me to wake up. And I just pray. This is why I wrote the book. I pray your listeners don't have to experience that crisis, because they may not be as lucky as I was. You know, I wish I had figured this out at 55. Oh my gosh, I'd be doing a dance in the street if I figured out at 45. You're just a baby, Lily. You're just, you know, 45. Did you say you're 45 or 44 or something like that? You know, you have so much opportunity because you have decades on advantage over me. So I would just say, please don't wait like I did, because you don't have to all start in our 20s. It's great if you do, or your 30s. It's great if you do. But 40s and 50s, that's a big head start from what I did. And so I would encourage you to get the one page compass. It's free. And then just start a Robinhood account if you're concerned about, you know, what account. And it's free. And then put $1 or $10 in. I'd recommend $10 more than $1. But, you know, and then just start it. And then every week, remember I told you about that one guy, $25 a week they put in there. Now, they had more time. They started at 25, but you can still do it. And they had $1 million fund with the right investment. So that's what I would recommend, is just take that little baby step. But if you're in heavy consumer debt, I'd say hold off. Don't you get the compass and just follow these. You'll get to the investment part when you're ready for it. And then start it. And then start it in a small way if you want. That's fine.
What else is on your wealth compass
Well,
that you haven't mentioned yet?
Well, you know, here's one, the pre-funds. This is so good, okay? Most people call them sinking funds. I don't like the name of a sinking fund. It's not like your money's going into a black hole, sinking. So I call them pre-funds. And let me tell you how this happened. When I started making good money, I remember the first October of that year, all my bunch of different bills were coming due. My property tax bill came through, my car insurance came through. I think we had a dental bill that we knew about a couple months in advance that came through, and they all hit at the same time. Now I was making good money, but still, it's like when all the big ones hit at once, it's kind of like, well, okay. So I had to do a lot of juggling of money and moving things in and out of accounts, and we made it through the month, but it was, you know, it wasn't fun. I felt frustrated because I was making good money. There's no reason I should have done that. Well, then October was over, now we're November, and then Christmas comes. And so another big wave of bills hit us, okay? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I'm making good money and I'm scrambling for money. And it seems like I gotta stop this. So what I did is I built what I called a pre-fund. And what I did is I identified all the non-regular expenses. Like, it's not hard to forget about your phone bill or your electric bill because it is every month, and it's, you never get behind because you use it every month. But when you're talking about things that don't happen every month, like your car insurance or your mortgage, I mean, not your mortgage, or your tax, property tax, things like that, that's stuff that just pops up, or a vacation you want to take. That's stuff that's not, doesn't happen every month. And so if you don't put the money aside, so I added up all those irregular expenses for the year. Okay, I went through, I said, what are we going to do this year? Are we going to, you know, this. And then I took that number and I divided it by 12. And I opened a fund. I put a fund in, this is a savings account, it's no big deal, where I was already had a savings account. And I put that money in a separate savings account. Every month, that same amount went in that account. Guess what happened the next year when my property taxes came due and my car insurance? It was effortless. It was almost fun. I hate to say it was fun to pay a bill, but it was almost fun to pay it because the money was right in the account. When Christmas came, there was no hassle. I wasn't stressed about the presents because why? We had the money in our pre-fund. We pre-funded our purchases. Most people do that in reverse. They go into credit card debt, and then now they're paying for something from the past. They probably don't even have it anymore. What's much more fun to pay something that you're looking forward to in the future than paying something that in the past, that, you know, the vacation's over with and, you know, okay, we have pictures, but that's about it, you know? So that's when I started the pre-funds. And that's on my account. And I have two kinds of pre-funds. One are essential or required pre-funds. That's like, you know, your tax, like for your property. And then there's the non-essentials, the more fun ones, like a vacation or gifts or a new TV or whatever the heck you want to buy, you know, like the fun stuff. This way, when if an emergency happens, you can stop your fun one. You can stop your fun pre-funds because you can handle an emergency. But the essential ones, required ones, you want to keep that going because otherwise you'll multiply your emergencies. And so that's a real important thing that I don't think a lot of people take into account. And it makes life just more peaceful. I mean, I don't have the stress of, oh my gosh, how am I going to handle that big bill coming? It's already handled. It was already handled like months ago. Every month I put a little bit in there. So anyways, that's another one that I think is kind of important.
Thank you. Tell us, what else do you have on your wealth compass?
Sure. Okay.
Entrepreneurs to build wealth.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this one. You know, a lot of people, they don't know what their financial freedom number is. In other words, they want to retire wealthy. They want to retire financially independent, but they don't know what that is. It's a fuzzy sort of feel good thought, but what's the dollar amount? How much is the money I need to do it? It's kind of like running a race and not knowing where the finish line is. It's kind of hard to win that race, okay? And so what I did, one of the things in my book, and it's mentioned on the compass, is you get your financial freedom number up front, like early before you're even close to retirement. So you just have an idea, and here's how you do it. It's four simple steps, okay? Step number one is, what you do is you identify how much money you want to have every year for income in retirement. Let's just make up a simple number, $100,000. If you said, if I was making $100,000 a year in my retirement without having to work for it, just getting it from investments like that, then I would be comfortable and I could live the rest of my life very happy, okay? So that's step one. Step two is identify any guaranteed income you're going to have at retirement. Social Security, pension, annuities, maybe investment property, income, whatever it is, okay? And so let's just make up a number. Say you're going to make $24,000 a year in Social Security, okay? Step three is you take the $100,000 you want minus the $24,000 you're guaranteed to get, and the difference is $76,000. And that's the money your investment account needs to generate, on average, so you can live a $100,000 comfortable lifestyle in retirement. And then the fourth and final step is you divide that $76,000 by 5%, or whatever your withdrawal rate is. Say you're going to take 5% of your portfolio out every year to live on, okay? That's $1.52 million. So when you have $1.52 million built up in your account, you could retire, basically. Now, compare that to what Curtis did. He was a mechanical drafter. He calculated his number at age 60. And what happened was he found out that his retirement number, his financial free number, was $1.4 million. But when he looked at his investment accounts and his retirement accounts, they totaled $2.4 million. He could have retired years earlier and he didn't even know it. That's why I say it's hard to win a race when you don't know the finish line, where you can't find the finish line. And what that those four steps do, it shows you the finish line. So when you're building wealth and you're seeing your wealth multiplying, it just makes life a lot easier because you know what the where the goal is. That makes sense.
Yes. Tell us one more step from your wealth compass for entrepreneurs who want to build wealth.
Well, let me explain. This is a step in it, but it's not really one of the nine steps, but it's one of the North Star principles, okay? And it's called the three C's. This is really important. So many people out there, there's so much noise and conflicting information out there, and people, a lot of them, it's kind of dangerous if you are not aware of what's going on. Let me explain what these three C's are. The first C is conflict of interest. This is when someone's paycheck influences greatly the financial advice they give you. For example, a realtor creates fear of missing out with a buyer because they want to close a deal and make a $15,000 commission check, even though the house may not be the perfect house for the customer or for the buyer. Or the student loan advisor gets paid. His salary is he's paid to get people into student loan debt. That's what he does for a living. And he gets people into debt. And some of these people, when they graduate, or even before they graduate, they have decades of debt to pay off. I don't know if you know this, Lily, or have heard this before, but there are people in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s still paying off student loans. And some of those people didn't even graduate. It's like buying a car but not getting a car with it. You're just paying the payments. So, and here's the sad thing is when you're in your 80s, what happens is the government then takes a part of your Social Security to pay that student loan. So now you're getting a cut in your Social Security because this is an 18-year-old's decision that is haunting them for the rest of their life, some of these people, until they go to their graves. That is terrible. And that's why conflicts of interest, even though they may be innocent, the guy's just doing his job getting into student loan debt, that's something that can really be dangerous. The second C is conflict of information gap. Let me give you a non-financial example because these principles apply in every area of your life. When I was in my mid-50s, I went to my doctor to have an annual exam, physical, and he did a blood test. He comes back, he says, "Oh my gosh, David, your cholesterol is 235. Now, anything over 200 is dangerous, and the higher, the worse. So 235 is pretty dangerous. You could have a stroke and die. We need to get you on statins right away." I said, "Okay, but let me do a little research first." He goes, no, we need to get you on statins right now. And then he told me a story about his father, how he had high cholesterol, he died of a stroke, and how that he could have, you know, maybe prevented it if he had statins. And he almost cried in his office. And I was touched by his story. I said, "That's a very interesting story, but I still need to do my research." And he was not happy. Went home, did the research, found out lifestyle has a big impact on your health and your cholesterol. I changed my diet. I changed my lifestyle. I did my exercises. 180-degree turnaround. 90 days later, Lily, I went back to the doctor, had another blood test. My cholesterol went from 235, which is dangerous, to 175. Anything under 200 is great, which is amazing. I was so excited. I want to tell the doctor how I did it, and he didn't want to hear it. He says, "It's just a fad. It's not going to stick with it. You should go on statins right now." Well, a fad. I am now 72, Lily. My cholesterol is not 175 anymore. It's 165. It's even healthier. It's even lower. So some fad. I'm not saying the doctor was a crook. I'm just saying what he learned in medical school maybe was, hey, prescription drugs and a scalpel are the only solutions we really got here. Well, there's a lot more solutions out there. He had a conflict of information gap. He didn't understand because he never studied the other stuff. And a lot of people do that with a lot of things. The third C, the third conflict, is conflict of responsibility. I believe this is the most dangerous of all, and let me tell you why. This is assuming, this is when you assume the other person did the research on what they're advising, and they assume you're going to do your own research on what you're advising, and nobody does the research. I knew this guy who was in investments. That's what he did. He's a decent person, but he got so excited about this new investment he got, and he wanted to get people involved in it. And he went to his church and got people in his church involved. They knew well, they all trusted him, liked him, said, okay, sure, we'll do it. Well, the problem with that is the people in the church assumed he did the research. He assumed the person offering the investment did the research, and nobody did the research. Everybody lost big money, and everybody lost really good friendships. Here's what I found out first. A person's paycheck is a powerful manipulator of truth. Nobody cares more about your financial success and your financial security than you do, and you need to take charge of it. That's why I built the One Page Compass, because even if you have an advisor, you need to be the CEO, though. You need to be in charge, and you need to make sure you're directing things in the right way, because no one cares more about your success than you do.
Thank you. Tell us where investors and entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Absolutely. Then go to my website. It's onepagewealthcompass.com. I'll give you the information for your show notes. And basically, the first thing they're going to see on when they get on there is download your free one-page PDF of the compass. This is the very compass I used at 63 to 69, and I still use it today. I do my two-minute review every day to keep me laser-focused. And it's free. There's no strings. There's nothing to pay. When you do get it, you put your email in. You get right to your email. You'll also be part of my free newsletter, which I give extra tips to help you with the things that you know that you might want to think. And if you like the compass and you like the tips, then I would recommend getting the book. It's a very inexpensive book on Amazon, but just because they go together so well, it's like the one's a 30,000-foot view, and then one's the day-to-day ground game telling you the specifics. And together, it's like you've got powerful laser focus that can really help you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.